There you go. Chet Edwards joins us from D.C. Good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Scott. Good morning.
Tell me what we've got on the agenda for this week in the House.
Well, there are a lot of minor non-controversial bills, Scott, but the two main bills are, one, a bill that I will support that strengthens Medicare anti-fraud measures. What it does is say if an entity or a person has been convicted of fraud or crime, they cannot participate in state health care programs or Medicare. And I think that's one of the things we've got to do to bring down the deficit is really put more energy into taking even good programs and weeding out the cases where people have used those fraudulently. The second issue
Before we go on to that, this obviously is talking about people who have committed fraud in the past. We are continuing to hear about doctors all over, coast to coast, basically, who have put together some sort of a system that does defraud Medicare. What is in place to make sure that there's not fraud in the Medicare or Medicaid programs?
Well, there are new provisions in the law that say that if it looks questionable, Medicare can actually withhold paying a physician or a hospital until it is cleared up. In the past, the policy was to actually pay in the taxpayers' money, and then you spend years arguing over the fraud. Now, sometimes it's a question of whether a doctor applied a particular disease under one category or another. It's not intentional. But when we find intentional cases of fraud, we ought to throw the book at those kind of people, because I believe in the Medicare program. But the best way to bring down a program and undermine it is to allow rampant fraud.
Right. Okay, then what else?
Well, the other bill is one that I opposed several months ago, and it will create a $30 billion fund to have the federal government give to community banks and have them loan that money out. My position is this. In the fall of 2008, when we were on the edge of an economic collapse and possibly a second Great Depression, President Bush came to me and asked me to vote for the financial stabilization bill. I voted for that. It did help stabilize the economy. And we're actually going to make a profit on the money loaned to the banks at that time. But we are now technically out of a recession. We're not nearly where we need to be in economic growth. But instead of losing 700,000 jobs a month, we're gaining 67,000 private sector jobs a month. And I just don't think now is the time to be having the federal government sticking its arm into community banks with $30 billion and all the massive regulations that will come with that. I think the better way to help community banks and small businesses is to get the federal regulators to ease up on some of their heavy-handed regulations to them. You know, the community banks didn't create this economic mess. That was a lot of the folks on Wall Street. But it seems like the regulators spend too much time regulating the small community banks and too little time regulating the big Wall Street banks. Well, that's a real problem.
I don't think there's any doubt there, but why can't we streamline the regulations? There's no doubt that people go, yeah, we'd love to have the money, but the caveats that are involved, community banks respond better to those individuals, small business people or individuals who need money, than do the banks that are based far away. Why can't we do something to streamline the regulations, make those minimalized so that money can be given to community banks?
Well, I think that's a good question, and I have had several meetings, probably half a dozen meetings on that very issue with federal regulators. I think the problem was after you started having banks going bankrupt around the country in such large numbers in 2008, they all panicked, and instead of focusing most of their time on the big banks where the problems were, they said, well, we can get our arms around these small community banks. And look, the small community banks didn't put our country at risk, and most of them ran their business very, very well. And I would favor a provision, a change in the law that would say that if a community bank has a good, solid audit, then you ease up on their regulations for a year or two and give them the freedom to loan money out to good small businesses. We went from one end of the pendulum to the other. For a while, people were getting loans that didn't have any business getting them for their houses or for their businesses. Now, what's hurting this economy is that good, well-run, well-managed small businesses cannot get loans.
Congressman Chet Edwards joining us from D.C. Last week, we talked about the continuing resolution might be something that's passed. Now, that seems to be stalled in the Senate. talk about that, but let's also talk about how long are y'all going to be in session, because there's been some discussion about how long Congress will be in session before they recess again.
Scott, normally in an election year, Congress finishes its business around the 1st of October. So this year, we originally planned to go till about October 7th. My guess would be somewhere around that first week of October, Congress will recess until the elections. There will be a continuing resolution passed between now and then to keep the federal government going, because on October 1, just a few weeks away, you begin a new fiscal year. And so we have to have funding for agencies like the Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs. And so we'll do that. And my guess is there will be a post-election session to pass the full appropriation bills.
Quite honestly, there are people who are concerned that there'll be lame ducks in Congress that will try to push through some pretty unusual legislation since they won't be back in January. Your thoughts on that?
Well, the work that Congress must do is pass appropriation bills. And I don't think it's right for the next Congress, whoever is in charge, to leave that unfinished business. There's still checks and balances in the system to keep any major abuses. For example, any major bill except for budget to go through the U.S. Senate requires 60 votes, and there are not 60 Democrats in the U.S. Senate today. So it would require anything that would pass after November would require bipartisanship.
It would seem that at least there's some salvos that are being sent out that this may in fact be a battle for appropriations with the White House, that the Republicans feel like they'll make some gains in the midterm elections, and they may not want to fund the Health Care Act or the Wall Street reforms.
Well, I think that's up to the next Congress, and I can't really speculate about what the next Congress might do at this point.
It's not the first time that it's happened, but Elizabeth Warren happens to be the name that's out there right now. She is a Harvard professor who was appointed by the president to head up this new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. She did not have to go through the advice and consent process. What's your thought? Obviously, Obama's not the first president to do that. What's your thought in this day and time that we're having this done, where the president simply places someone where they do not have to go through any kind of legislative scrutiny?
Well, I like the idea of legislative scrutiny. That is the role of the United States Senate. And you're right, both Republican and Democratic presidents have sometimes gone around the Senate in that approval process. One thing I think we need to change in the Senate, Scott, is that one senator can put a private hold on appointments. And this is done in important agencies, our intelligence agencies, Department of Defense, Veterans Affairs. And if a senator is going to put a hold on a president's appointment, I think it ought to be public, and many times they don't put a hold on it because of some principal position. They do it because they want some special interest provision taken care of in their home state, and I don't think that's a good way to govern either. So the process really is not working right now, and I wish the senators would get together before the election, not knowing which party is going to be in charge of the Senate, and say, okay, let's agree right now what the rules are going to be in the next Senate. If we could do that, we could make the Congress a lot more functional.
Our state leadership, along with, I guess, probably 49 other states, are concerned about budget shortfalls. Chris Christie, the Republican governor in New Jersey, seems to be the poster boy right now for pension problems that his state is having. But that's being seen almost coast to coast. There's concern about, will the federal government come in and help states out to balance their budgets next year? As one member of Congress, what's your feeling about our Congress, federal Congress, being in that game with the states?
Well, I voted in 2009 with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce for the 2009 stimulus bill. The U.S. Chamber said the economy was in a free fall and we could literally go into a deep recession. That stimulus bill provided a $1,600 tax cut for 95% of Texans and $16 billion that kept the state of Texas from laying off professors at A&M and Blinn College and cutting our school teachers' budgets and our school districts. But that's when we were in the verge of the deepest recession since the Great Depression. Now that we are starting to see a small amount of economic growth, and I think it's now the timing's important to show the country we're going to reduce deficits. So there will not be the kind of economic stimulus that you saw 2 years ago when the U.S. Chamber was saying it was needed to jumpstart the private enterprise system.
Congressman Chet Edwards joins us most Wednesdays when Congress is in session. You can hear the entire interview on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time.
Scott, thank you now.
All right.
Bye-bye.